Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean. Today on the pod, we have Kate Murphy, initiated high priestess, entrepreneur, and founder of The Feminine Code. You can find her on Instagram at @thisiskatemurphy if you're curious. I found Kate probably a year ago on Instagram and was immediately drawn to the word priestess. What does it mean? What does she do? She seems so in her divine feminine power. As a girly that grew up in the Catholic Church, I was fascinated. I was enamored by her and stalking her religiously. And now she's on the podcast, a dream guest for sure, a manifestation come through, and she's everything I expected and more. On this episode, we're going to talk about Kate's unorthodox journey to being a priestess, but it's actually pretty orthodox when you look under a couple of layers. What it actually entails, the divine feminine, its power, and the importance of not putting people in boxes, something I'm particularly passionate about, as you know. Kate has such grounded, peaceful energy and is clearly so knowledgeable and innovative, and I know that you're going to feel that energy as you listen. Enjoy, guys. And Kate, thanks for being on the pod with me. Let's just get into it. I was a little bit frazzled-dazzled. For anybody listening, I have been looking forward to this podcast for weeks, because I've been admiring you from afar for months and love all of the content that you put out and the information that you put out. But there was Wi-Fi issues yesterday in my home. No Wi-Fi was supposed to be fixed last night, not fixed last night. Now it's going to be fixed tonight. I'm at Starbucks. We've got some early 2000s pop in the background. I'm like running around Starbucks inside, outside, trying to find the outlet for my computer to charge. Like chaos. But with all of this chaos and these hurdles, I think it's a beautiful lesson to just go with the flow, which is my word for the year. So for anyone listening, if you hear a little bit of what was Beyonce's group called before she went solo?
Destiny's Child.
So if you hear some Destiny's Child in the background, just like take it as a little quirk of the episode. Today we have Kate Murphy. Please just introduce yourself to everybody listening. Who are you? What do you do? What's your background?
It's always so fun to get these questions about, you know, the who are you and how do you show yourself to the world? Because I could say a million things and it would change all the time. I feel like we're such, you know, evolving creatures. But my name is Kate Murphy and I'm a Canadian citizen who's based in Vancouver. And has spent the last, you know, 13 years living in Norway, where I initiated as a priestess and ran a chess tech company. And a lot of people, when they start to get to know me, they're like, what? I don't get it. How do you do both and? And I think that comes down to the difficulty of placing labels on ourselves, is that we can be all and. And I would say that's how I would introduce myself in a nutshell, other than being a free spirit, a wild woman, you know, animal lover, plant dialogue-esque, however you would say that. And yeah, I would say that's how I would introduce myself in this context with the woo-woo bestie.
I completely agree. When it comes to us wanting as a society to put people into boxes. People, I'm sure you've seen, people have like a really hard time understanding that I'm woo-woo and Christian, and that those two things can coexist. And you can be like in your MILF era shotgunning beers for a Christmas card and also be an incredibly present mother to your child. So I'm all for that description. And regarding chess tech, well, actually, let's go back. You're currently in Norway?
No. So I was originally born in Vancouver or around Vancouver in Canada, and I moved to Norway after graduating for 13 years. I lived there 13 and a half. And it kind of came full circle, and circumstances brought me back home. Yeah, so to speak, wherever home is in this context is, well, Vancouver now.
It sounds like you've been constantly surrounded by some beautiful nature in your travels.
Yes, I've been very blessed to be around the mountains and the trees, both here in the west coast of Canada and the fjords in Norway. I've always thought that Canada has this majesty about it when it comes to connecting with the nature here. And Norway feels so much more like the good folk realm, the fairy realm, so mystical. So there's these kind of two experiences of such beautiful nature. And then, of course, you know, all the pilgrimage sites that one does on their journey as well. You know, it's just such an incredible way to kind of lead the call, is to follow where you feel called to be in nature.
I have been finding and accepting and opening up to the fact that I'm not completely the ocean girl that I always thought I was. And I'm much more of a forest, hiking, mountains, greenery, rocks girl. So I have this soul yearning over the past year to just be in like the thick of nature and the mountains and the dense trees and forests, not to mention even the history that can exist in so many of those places and the wisdom that can just exist in those trees. Like, I'm all about that. And I think it's beautiful that you've been able to follow that throughout your course. So after you graduated, you went to Norway, and Norway is when the chess tech company happened. Right?
Yeah, I mean,
talk all about that.
First, there was love with a Norwegian, and then there was Norway.
Okay. So it wasn't completely random.
No, it was, I met him studying, and, you know, as the Vikings do, they take you back to their lands. So I had an interesting initiation into the Norwegian world. I mean, Norway is such a special place. It's full of such beautiful nature and wonderful people, but it takes a while to crack into society there because it is quite close-knit. It's a small country. You know, the language is unique. The culture is unique, even though it can sometimes have similarities to North America. It was a difficult, challenging time. And during that time, you know, I was freshly minted out of my MBA and trying to find a way to get into work in a country I didn't speak the language. And so it was definitely a journey towards, the unknown. And it landed me in the most unexpected of places, which was co-founding and becoming CEO of an international chess tech company that I headed up for 8 years as CEO. And then when I left, it went public. So, you know, it was quite an incredible journey of, you know, expressing and exploring what it is to be in the analytical and in the masculine, and at the same time, walking the priestess path, you know, quietly in my own world. And that was an interesting experience as well, to feel what it was to really split myself, which is why I feel I started with the labels can be challenging for me, because I used to label myself in separate compartments or separate areas of my life. And living that kind of life is really damaging and exhausting. gets really tiring to have to show up in different ways rather than just show up in all the ways.
I completely agree. And in showing up in all of the ways, which is often our authentic way, is to dip a little bit into these different types of boxes. That can be very, it takes a lot of bravery and courage because society still is not okay or comfortable with or can't really comprehend on a larger scale the fact that there's so much fluidity in our identity and the roles that we play, and not just the roles that we like play for others, but the areas that we're exploring within ourselves. I think people are starting to open up to that and open up to the idea of that duality and the non-mutual exclusivity of these varying like labels that we like to put on each other. But to be able to step into and combine CEO, chess tech company, priestess is hard in and of itself, but it's also so natural too. It's the most natural, in my opinion.
Eventually it got natural, but it was challenging, as you said, at first.
Did you have a history in chess?
Of course not. That's what makes it so weird, is that I didn't even know how to play chess. And, you know, when I first met, I was working with and for the world chess champion, and I didn't even know who he was. So I went into a meeting with his manager and was told about this guy that's the world chess champion, or he wasn't quite at that time, but he was, you know, one of the highest rated in the world. And I was like, I don't know. I'm from Canada. We watch hockey. Like, I had no idea what I was getting into. And I think that's kind of where the magic lies, is at the same time I got offered this role to go and co-found and move through. And it's interesting because I had another gig that was lined up where I was finally getting a full-time safe consulting job in a big consulting firm. And then I had this offer from the manager and an investor. And so it was kind of like, take the jump and go to the, you know, the direction that makes absolutely no sense to your mind, but there's something intuitively interesting here, or go the safe route and get the nice fat paycheck and be safe and, you know, just coast. And well, the story begins.
You said that you graduated with your MBA. So being in this, and we're going to get to the divine feminine in a second, I promise. So what were your goals and aspirations with graduating with your MBA? Because you really did lean into what your degree would have prescribed, right?
Well, somewhat. I mean, an MBA, usually you end up in some sort of like Fortune 500 big company or doing consulting, but it is business. So you're right. Like I went into business, running a business, but it's still what I'm doing today. And I would say that I don't use a lot of what I learned in my MBA, but more about, you know, how to start and scale up a company from scratch, because that's something they can't really teach you in school. That's something that's a lot more tricky to like get something going. Once you're in an organism that's, you know, running and doing its thing, it's quite easy to plug in and know your role. But when you're everything at the very beginning, it's a very different experience, so to speak.
That's what I was going to say, was do we like use anything from our degrees? Because so much of what I found, I mean, yes, like college and learning and being in that environment and theorizing and like reading and analyzing, I love that stuff. And it teaches you so much about yourself and like thought experiments and expanding your opinions of things. But when we get into the real world, so much of it is just learning on our own anyway. And it sounds like that's exactly what you were experiencing, especially when you said that you were, this is what I understood, when you were hopping from the chess company to now your business, you were doing everything and learning from the, relearning from the ground up. And of course, there were some foundational tools that you had understood from the chess company, but also just like such a wildly dynamic and different field and nature and environment.
Absolutely. It was scary too, just from the perspective of, you know, my spiritual path had been such a private thing for me for, you know, well over a decade at that point. I had kept it quite quiet, except for around, you know, my friends in the yoga world and meditation world. But in terms of my public profile, and I had a blog at that time too, which, you know, I was doing publicly, but just with my first name, never used my last name to try and keep it, again, separate, compartmentalized. And that ended up doing really well on the side as well. And it was like fusing, you know, doing something of your passion and fusing the learnings that you have from, you know, the traditional space that you've been in to create something entirely new. And, you know, it was at the very end of my time with the chess company that I was already developing what became known as the Feminine Code. I had spent the last year preparing for an exit and preparing to launch into this new expression of what my work felt like it needed to be in the world. And that was to really show up in the feminine in this context of business. And that was the first place I was comfortable stepping publicly into the priestess path, was linking it to business. And in some ways, you know, it was the first step. It was, you know, here, I'm going to put my toe out there and see what it's like to combine this. And as that became more comfortable, I became more and more at ease with really going full into, here's all of me. Yes, I like business. I like the analytical side. I love to create, because it really is creation. And then, of course, the priestess path and what that means. And so that became a very big part of how I now express myself in the world publicly, because it feels much more in alignment with what I'm here to do and how I'm here to share at this time.
When you were launching the Feminine Code or moving into your priestess journey and dipping your toe in, it felt like a natural progression. Were you getting, for lack of a better word, like intuitive pings while you were at this chess company that there was a little bit more force than you wanted to live with and that you were moving toward flow?
Yeah, I mean, that is why it all went down in this way. You know, I burnt out, really. I was working insane hours, you know, like crazy. I was traveling all the time. I was doing red eyes, you know, every week, you know, getting back and forth between the city I needed to be in and where our partners were. And it was pretty wild. It was an amazing experience. I wouldn't change it for the world, but I did burn out. And it was at that time where I burnt out that I started, you know, realizing that if I didn't start weaving in what I understood to be true around the feminine, even in a very practical way, from like cycle syncing and you know, taking care of the physiology to support the emotional and spiritual and even intellectual side of myself, that it wasn't going to be sustainable. And so it became a necessity. And that's kind of the beginnings of how it happened. I started cycle syncing, working with that. And I was very fortunate in that the role I was in, I had some control over, you know, what I was doing at what time. All that to be said is I started cycle syncing with my work, and that really started changing things for me. And that shift and that change, I had to share it in some way. And I wasn't really sure how to do that while I was in that role. And then I started thinking, what if I created something that taught this? What if I could teach this? And of course, it went beyond cycle syncing and also into working with being more accepting and honoring of our feminine to create, not from a place of making money, but creating from a place of truth and authenticity and expression. Because when we're creating from that place, it really is a very different experience that we have in our lives. It's not exhausting, and it's not depleting, but rather it's almost life-giving when we're working and creating from that place. And so, yeah, I decided that was going to be my next step, was to see if this could be received, if others would find this valuable. And it turns out that it has been. And I'm in my fifth season now of offering that specific training. And of course, much else has come also in that time.
Before we get into what the divine feminine is, just from like a basic definition and moving forward from that, I want to know about your secret spirituality that you were keeping. That's what I wrote down. That's not what you said, I don't think. But that you were keeping close to your close friends and with your blog with only your first name. Can you tell me where that interest in spirituality started? Were you always more intuitive or inclined as a kid? Was there a mentor that impacted you? What did that path look like?
Certainly as a child, I was very interested in the mystical, the occult even, and, you know, not understanding what was beyond and spending a lot of time trying to understand what was on the other side of what we could see. And so I would say, you know, quite a mystical kid, as many of us are. You know, so many are born and experience these insights and have these gifts. We all have these gifts. And then something happens and it goes underground for a while. And so that was certainly my own personal experience as well. And I can't say that there was a specific mentor, but certainly I was into reading books about the mystical and, you know, working with candle magic and not really understanding at the time what I was doing, just knowing it felt intuitive and called and right. And you know, it didn't stay that way because it wasn't something that was accepted and, you know, maybe a bit scary too for my family, because I too was brought up in a Christian home. So, you know, it wasn't really accepted. It was seen as something that was going outside of the known realm, what was safe and what was good. It was an interesting journey to come back to that after some years.
You had to keep these inclinations private long before you were at the chess company and having that like relationship with it. Were you having to keep it close-knit when you were growing up in your Christian home?
Well, I kind of stopped because it became something that was, you know, not allowed. And it maybe even scared me a little bit to hear, you know, that it was working with bad things and not understanding at that time anything else. So I would say it went underground quite a bit for some years, and still knowing, you know, I still spent time singing to the waters. It was just a very communicative time with nature, I would say. And that maintained throughout. But I would say, you know, doing rituals and burying spells and things, I did stop for a while when I was in my teens. And that kind of came back around very naturally in my very early 20s when I heard about this word priestess. It just evoked something in me and started a very long and beautiful journey into discovering and uncovering what this natural inclination was around the divine feminine.
And then you were initiated as a priestess. So can you tell me about that period of time and what a priestess is?
Great question. So the reopening to the spiritual realm, I would say, was probably more closely begun through yoga and meditation, like coming back into that, because it was accepted. It was becoming more accepted at that time, you know, my late teens, early 20s. And then that kind of evolved into reminding and remembering that there was this innate interest within me. And then that priestess experience was kind of like, aha. Yeah, over many years, I began studying, seeking teachers, doing many different, I guess, trainings, you could say, and eventually found a teacher that really resonated with where I was at that time, and did both. I did two initiations within that lineage called the Rose Lineage, and I ordained after about 13 years in that space. So it was quite a journey, and I would say that it hasn't ended by any means. I'm still very much looking to understand more. And I think that will be a lifelong journey of just continuing to go deeper and expand wider into what is it to be walking this path of the priestess. And perhaps I answer your next question about what is a priestess. And for me, it's about walking a path of service and love. It doesn't have to look in a very particular way. I think that one can walk that path in many forms and not necessarily having to dedicate one's life to living in solitude and going deep into the realms of the divine all the time, but rather seeing the divine in everything that is around you in the everyday. And the priestess also, if you look at it from the perspective of a role, is a guide and a teacher. The root of priest or priestess is elder. So it's about being also a guide and holding ceremonial space often, or ritual space, for helping others come into their own experience directly connected to their relationship to the divine. And that's the beauty of it, I feel, is that everyone is sovereign in their own experience with the divine. And sure, there can be teachers along the way, but it's not about being led by someone. It's about leading yourself. And I feel that that also encompasses what it is to walk this path.
Becoming a priestess, being a priestess, not associated with any religion. Correct.
Correct.
Becoming a priestess, it entails a training, becoming ordained, a lot of education and learning. Would you equate it with a certification of skill that you could share? Like, how can we distill this down to make it easier for people that are so wildly unfamiliar?
To be a priestess in terms of practicing, mm-hmm. I would say it's important to train in some way, because there is something so important about learning how to energetically hold a container, how to energetically move and keep space safe. And there's so many different initiations that we must walk through before we're at a place that we can teach. But that being said, I feel that many are called to the word priestess, and many feel this connection that I had. And I think many are priestess, and it's reawakening. And to say you need a certification, I feel, is not right, because it's about sovereignty and to journey on your own path. But if you are really dedicated to going deeply into understanding the divine feminine and holding space in this way, I think it is important to have a teacher and have a guide and learn your way through that rhythm. Now, you know, to ordain is something that means, you know, you've crossed certain thresholds over a certain number of years, often with a teacher and often in community, where you're working with others and really training how to hold a resonance. And that's the really important piece, is how to hold resonance. And that's not an easy thing to teach or to learn. Oftentimes it's innate within us, but there is something to be said about how to hold it in this type of container. So no, it's not a certification that you need, but yes, if you are going to be doing this as your work in the world, I do recommend finding a teacher that feels in alignment with you. Because here's the thing with the priestess lineages, they've all been desecrated. They have been burned, put underground, you know, have had to go into hiding. And so there is no true, pure, untouched knowledge that we have. And so that's why it's so difficult to say it has to go this way, because that's a very patriarchal way to look at it, you know, hierarchical and structure oriented. But there is something to be said about the unity of the divine feminine, the divine masculine coming together, and learning about the container to hold what's already naturally within you can be very helpful. And so I will say that.
So beautifully said. Thank you so much for understanding my very simplistic question and answering it so well, because I know that can sometimes be hard to take something that you've been living out for so long and simplify it when it's already so integrated into you. Now, it's becoming clear to me through our conversation, and my understanding of priestess is still very like remedial, very beginner stages, but I'm watching lots from afar. It's intricately woven into the divine feminine. Is it also just a reclamation of the divine feminine? Is it another word for that?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. I would say in many ways, it is a remembering and a bringing forward, because the intention of the priestess path, and while it is very innately connected to the divine feminine and the feminine archetypes and the goddess or goddesses, is that it's raising the existence and experience of it in the consciousness on the planet so that it can meet the masculine, the divine masculine. And so really, it's about finding this unity of bringing both and something that's been very difficult to see in a lot of the religions that we experience today, that there's the feminine is there, but it's sometimes not very present in all of its expressions, its fullness of both the wild expression and the very pure, nurturing, motherly expression. And so it's about bringing, you know, all aspects of the feminine to meet all aspects of the masculine and really weaving that together as one.
So it seems like the ultimate goal of individuals walking this path, but also the collective of people, women who are walking this path to become a priestess or even just to reconnect with their divine feminine is to create that both and feminine and masculine into our collective consciousness and society. And when we have enough individuals that are reclaiming and living out this path, it will then become more normalized. These thought processes will become more normalized, more accepted. And at that point, once we have this equality in our society of that divine masculine, of that divine feminine, is when we can really reach our highest potential. Did I understand that at all?
That's beautifully put. You know, it is about bringing these frequencies together, not separating them or segregating anymore. And that's really what has become very apparent, is that we as humans really love to separate and put things into boxes and label things and make it really easy to understand. And certain processes and certain labels and experiences are a lot more lucrative sometimes, or, you know, easily accessible. And so we stay away from maybe some of the shadow aspects that, if integrated, would greatly benefit our society as a whole. And so when we start bringing everything together as one and seeing it as unity, not going all the way over to the feminine or all the way over to the masculine, but rather bringing it as one and balanced. And, you know, that doesn't mean that it has to be feeling balanced at all times. We can move into the masculine and move into the feminine, the light aspects of it and the shadow aspects of it, and oscillate to have a full experience and have it all held. And if we were to do that, what would our world look like if, you know, our shadow was held equally with our light aspects, and if our masculine and feminine was equally held? And that's a really different expression of what it is to live our lives too, that we hold all of ourselves as a sovereign and fully expressed being, as opposed to segmented in different areas of our lives.
Incredible. And I think from what you're saying, it can really start within, with accepting and balancing the feminine and masculine, because that's what it is, right? We all possess divine feminine and divine masculine energies. And when we can really learn how to responsibly lean into both, that's when a lot of magic can happen. And then we're in, that's just the individual. And then when we're in partnership and learning how to honor the divine feminine and masculine in both, you create this beautiful new concept, new thought process, new culture within the relationship. And then it can get bigger and bigger. It can be these small steps toward leaning into these gifts as women that have been labeled as less than or pushed down or not valued. And so I want to tell you a funny story because I really want to lean into more of talking about what the divine feminine is. I have a cousin on my husband's side. In my home, I have a canvas of a Rupi Kaur poem that was really beautiful and touching to me. And I don't have it memorized, but it's something about how when we recognize that the home is within our bodies is when we can really come into communion. And that was really potent for me because I had gotten it when I was coming out of an eating disorder and learning how to come into allyship with my body. And you know how she makes those beautiful little pieces of art and doodles that go along with her messages. It was this figure, clearly a woman, sitting crisscross applesauce with plants coming out of her and rooting into the ground and flowers coming out of her head. And it was just this beautiful embodiment of what happens when you stop looking at your body as like this disconnected, segmented meat suit, but see it as all one and all home. And he sat down in my living room and he was like, "What is that?" And I said, "It's a Rupi Kaur poem." And he said, "Looks, are you like into this divine feminine? This is giving like, I can't put my finger on why I don't like this, but it's like divine feminine." And I'm like, "What do you think the divine feminine is?" And he said, "All of these women are starting to think that they're like gods." And I'm like, I mean, he means like putting themselves, he's from a very Christian background, and putting themselves above God. And I am a goddess and I have this power. But in his mind, it was much more of like a, oh God, takeover of the world, takeover of religion, women are better than men thing. And I was like, that's not it at all. So for anyone who might be coming from that thought process, can you explain to us what the divine feminine is and how it can exist in both women and in men?
Yeah, it's definitely not a gender thing. You know, when we think about creation, and if you go back 20,000 years and you look at what was revered, it was the creation myth. It was the divine feminine. It was the regenerative principle, that which brought forward new life, new creation, what brought forward the world, the universe. It was thought of as the feminine force. And eventually that shifted and it became more about a king and a masculine force that did the creation. And the way that that came through was, it was kind of in some ways taking away from the feminine expression, the feminine story. And, you know, it's not about one being better than the other at all. It's about that both are needed for creation. Both the masculine and the feminine are needed for creation. And so I don't even want to separate them from each other because you can't have one without the other. If you look at the sacred geometry of the Vesica Pisces, it's the two circles that overlock in the middle. And the center point is considered the expression of the unity, the union, also sometimes seen as the birth point or the yoni. And then we have the masculine and the feminine on either side. And it's about bringing these two essences together to express what it is to be connected to the divine. And it's never about being above God, goddess, spirit, universe, however you want to place a name upon that which has no name, really. Yeah, it's not an easy question to answer. And I really appreciate you asking it because it can be seen as, you know, oh, the divine feminine is this. I love using the word woo-woo, like woo-woo out there, you know, ungrounded, but it's really not. It's really one of the most grounded aspects because it is earth. It is nature. It is the creative force.
Well, first of all, you know, I my choice in becoming woo-woo bestie is because I feel like, and some people have had trouble with that word, which I understand and I honor, but when you are approached and see the word woo-woo, you kind of have an idea of what you're going to get on the other side. And my goal with that account and with these videos and this character of the woo-woo bestie is you walk in thinking that you're expecting one thing and you get it somewhat, but then you also get that it's not that woo-woo. And it's actually, like you said, really natural, really these intuitive inclinations that many people might have towards honoring and thanking the earth and finding the magic in planting seeds and co-creating with the earth to bring forth plants that feed you and nourish you, or the magic that comes with working with crystals and how cool they are, that they're like molecular structure is in such a beautiful organized pattern and how that works with your body. And so anyway, with woo-woo and with the divine feminine, what I have seen, and to speak on your point that it is the most natural, is, and I'm sure you would agree, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. And I also agree that it's not about gender, but these are the words that I can speak in right now to share. We're different. The sexes are different, and they're not less or better than. They have different gifts that if you're leaning more into one, there's no success. If you're leaning more into the other, there's no success. It takes the balance of these gifts in order to create, period. And what I have seen in the divine feminine is, what are these gifts that, for example, I have and that I find natural within me that my husband doesn't? And in the early days of my son being born, he was like, I cannot understand your patience with all of his needs. I cannot understand, and I cannot get to a place of nurturing at this time, but that's so natural for you. And it was so natural to me. It was instinctual to me. And so it's about what I have seen in my own journey to lean into my divine feminine is, how can I take these aspects of myself that may not really be honored, valued, like monetized by society, lean into them and allow them to guide me? And what I have found is when I restrict force, which I feel like is a little bit more of a masculine trait, making things happen, going forward, action oriented, which is beautiful and necessary at times. And when I lean into flow and what is natural to me and what feels like right and is just like intuitive, that is usually where I find that I'm much more of a clearer vessel and channel for creation to come through me.
I think this is the thing. There's no real true answer. Like, okay, how can one define God, goddess? You know, it's so difficult to define that. It's to experience it, really. And I think you're totally right that there is something to be said of, you know, we can go this certain way. We can embody the masculine aspects of, you know, going for it, ambition, drive, pushing, forcing, making it happen. And yes, sure, we might experience what society deems as success. Maybe it comes in the form of money or accolades. But to what extent is that real success when you're feeling depleted, exhausted, maybe depressed, anxious? You know, it's because there's this imbalance that is existing in many of us today. And part of this path of the priestess is to reawaken and honor these aspects that, quote, aren't monetizable, aren't necessarily driving the traditional success, but it makes you feel more grounded, connected, whole, you know, in your embodiment. And that's really why I think it's so important, is so that we don't forget that we have this aspect of us that can hold us and help us maybe be more at ease, more at peace, more in grace, more feeling alive and connected and trusting. And that really is the path.
So eloquently said. I feel so joyful hearing that, because you're right. In the long, it's a beautiful reminder. And what I got from what you just said is it's a beautiful reminder about the end of the day, what is important. And in the time when I was making a ton of money and I was getting a lot of praise for what I was doing and people were inspired by me, was also the time when I was feeling, when I was crying constantly, when I was feeling so depressed, when I was feeling anxious. Does that matter? The money? The praise? No. But now that I have the freedom to like wake up every morning and ground and talk to my plants and like say hi to the bees and plant seeds and journal and do these more, I mean, take care of my home, take care of my child, take care of me. Like now I'm at peace. Now all of this static noise around me that I used to not be able to escape has settled and I can reconnect with what has been trying to speak to me for years but hasn't been able to get through. It's almost like a tether has been strengthened between my soul and my mind. So I want to know about the transition from, I want to know about the birth of the feminine code and bringing in this divine feminine into the business world. Where is the power in that? What comes with it? What are the traits associated with it? How can we carry that out?
In so many ways, this felt like the perfect weaving of what I had experienced. And that was burnout, being in the masculine, having success in that way, just as you described, in the material realm, and feeling absolutely depleted. And so my intention was no more. And so I started doing what is what I call the feminine code in the business for several years before I brought it out into the world as what is now known as the feminine code business school. And so when I was exiting that company, I'd already started, I think I mentioned earlier, I'd already started building up this course that was teaching how we could do this in the business world, because that's really what I knew well, the business world, and how the feminine was not there, was not recognized, was not welcome. And so it started, and the foundation, of course, is to connect to our physical bodies, because that's telling us so much. Every single day, our journey is changing when we're in our bleeding years. And when we're not in our bleeding years, there's other things happening after you move through peri and menopause. There's these other expressions. And so to really be in tune with where we are every day is so important about how we're creating in the world. And so that was the foundation for where things began. And then it also evolved into weaving in more of the priestess path into starting and creating a business. Things such as, how do we connect to the divine aspect of what we're creating, not focusing so much on money? Because when we are manifesting, and I use quote hands here, because manifesting is such a big thing in the world, especially today, it's very trendy. But when we're doing our manifestation in exchange for money, that can become very depleting. And again, puts us in this energy of not necessarily give and receive, but rather give, work, exhaustion. And you end up in that same place, even though you're working with something that feels more aligned. And so it's also about shifting our energetic patterns for what we're trained to do into what we're born to do. Any human, you know, it doesn't matter what gender, it is what you're born to do, how you're born to create. And so creating from that place is also a foundational aspect of moving ourselves out into the world. If we do choose to, you know, whether it's start a business or create art, you know, do a film, write a book, raise a family, this is all creation. And so how can we do that in a way that is not depleting, that is recognizing that we have this other aspect of ourselves that can really create magic if we hold it.
Well, you mentioned when we are in creation, not creating from a place to make money, but creating from a place to create. Is that what you were discussing? Is that what you said? Did I interpret that right?
So I like to look at it as creating for service. How am I here to serve? How am I here to serve? And answering that question is really important, because when we get clear on how we're here to serve, some will call it their purpose, some will call it dharma. You know, there's many different names for what it is that you're here to do, and it can change. It doesn't have to always be the same. But how we're here to serve explicitly will probably evolve over your lifetime, but there will be a root. You know, there's that book, Start With Why. There's that root of why. What am I here to do? Why am I here to do it? And when we're tapped into that and we serve from that place, sure, the money will come. But it's secondary, because what we're really doing is serving, and serving from a place of love, ultimately.
You know, I sell Young Living oils, but I'm like, but the real goal is to educate and to share the excitement around plant magic and how we can reconnect with the earth and really give people the tools to enhance their spiritual practices, reconnect with themselves, gain a little bit more control in the areas of their life where they don't feel control, or they've resigned themselves to the fact that this is the way that they have to live for the rest of their lives. And if you're in this business for the money's not going to come. Or it will come and it's not going to be sustainable. But if it's based in your desire to serve and share something that genuinely excites you and share it in a way that is authentic to you, then not only are you filling your own cup, but that money and that success will naturally flow through, because that money and that success and those people are going to be naturally drawn to the energy of someone who is sharing and working and showing up from a place of authenticity, from a place of passion and like unadulterated excitement. You know what I mean?
It makes it easier to serve from that place too, because it's not a place that you can really get depleted, because it is, you know, your service feeds you. And that's how you know when it's right. If it's feeding you by doing that sharing or doing that work in the world. If we're going to exist in this society in some way, shape, or form, it is important to find ways to do that that still support our sovereignty, as much as that can feel conflicting. You know, how can we be sovereign in a society that is structured in this way? But it is about going beyond that and really coming into service and what is the calling? What is it that we're being called to do, called to share?
So do you have any tips for our listeners for ways that they can start learning how to tap in or plug into that calling, that divine feminine energy, that energy that we want to ideally be working from and showing up in the world from?
Okay, so this one is kind of woven, because when I get this question a lot because of the nature of the business school part of my work, and even with the priestess trainings I teach, you know, it comes up like, what am I here to do? How am I here to serve? How do I know what I'm here to do? And it's not an easy question to answer. You know, some people have the aha moment where they just get this clear vision of what it is they're here to do, and others navigate life like I have, you know, doing many different things to find the way and finding different expressions of it. And I would say, go first to what you were connected and drawn to as a child. When you go into that energy of where you gravitated as a child, touch into what the red thread was at early age. At an early age, what were you drawn to? How were you creating? What excited you? Then I would go into the subconscious realm. What evolves in dreams? What comes through when you're not in the mental mind thinking and analyzing and trying to put things on paper? What is it that you get signs about, you know, when you see repeating numbers? What's going on within you during that time? What happens when you get symbols or recurring, you know, animals that cross your path, a certain bird that flies by, or you find a certain type of feather? You know, all these signs and symbols are actually keys to helping us unlock what it is we're here to do. If we pay attention to what we're thinking about and what we're feeling in the moments we receive these symbols and these signs. And so I would say start there. Start with going into the childhood draw, what was really innate within you. Pay attention to the subconscious realm, dreams, where you go when you daydream as well. And pay attention to signs and symbols, where you feel you get that, ah, like I had that hearing the word priestess and there was that, ah, you know, this type of energy can really bring forward another layer of uncovering what it is we're here to do. And so don't hesitate to take a step in something that might not feel entirely it, but it gives you a clue. There's something that draws you there. And as the clue evolves, it takes you to your next step. And that will take you deeper and deeper. And allowing the journey to also be part of your purpose, to also be part of your service. It doesn't have to look the same.
The part about daydreaming, we don't think about that a lot when we think about dreams. The thread that I got from everything you just said was a heart of being open to looking for and being aware of looking for signs and aware of looking for the symbols in our dreams and aware of the people who might come across our path, who might invite us to something that sounds interesting, and then be like, ooh, actually, and then listening to that gut feeling, that sounds interesting. And maybe, like you said, it's not entirely what is that like full body yes, but it's kind of like a whisper yes. And every time you listen to that whispered yes, not only is your intuition going to become stronger and you'll learn to listen to that more because the intuition always knows, but you're right. It's going to continue leading you in breadcrumbs and clues to what ultimately is going to form this whole picture of what really it is that fills you up, what fills your soul, what makes you look at work as fun work, things that you want to be, things that are life-giving and energy-giving to you, and it creates this cycle of putting out creation from a place of energy, and then you have this magical, beautiful life of creation as you have with the birth of Feminine Code, which it sounds like you did. You found your purpose, you followed the breadcrumbs, and you kept doing work that kept giving you energy.
I would say it has evolved too. Realized that also I could share, and it was safe to share the priestess path more fully. And as I step more into that, and now doing trainings for women that are feeling called to that path, it is something that I think evolves and always can change, but the root will stay the same throughout. And that's the beauty of it, is it can have so many different expressions. And you can always change and you can always evolve. And, you know, what feels whole and holistic at one point might evolve in 5 years, and something else will present itself as the next step, the next layer of your discovering and your service. And that's the beauty of it, too. There's no real end point. It's a continuous journey, discovery.
I agree. I've been finding something silly, just some podcasts that I listened to from episode one to now, all of the changes and iterations that have happened within the podcast format. And this goes like across multiple podcasts, but this, the beauty of being open to the journey and learning and changing your mind and leaning into something and then feeling this isn't really it anymore. Let's try something else, and not feeling confined to this is what I chose, so this is what I have to do forever, and I have to force it. The beauty in the flow of what changes is really not only a service to you because it's getting you closer to your purpose or closer to yourself or closer to your spirituality or whatever you want to call it, but it's also such a beautiful model for those around you that are watching you walk gracefully through change and through changing your mind and through transformation and maturation. I think that's a gift that is often overlooked.
That is such an important piece of it, is that it can change. And that can be scary too, because along the way, you might lose certain things too. There's that shedding, you know, you mentioned like my own personal journey. If I look at it just from a very small window of something as simple as Instagram, built a following based on talking about yoga, meditation, and green beauty from, you know, when I was in my early 20s. And then I started shifting my work more towards the priestess path. And, you know, within that first few months of doing that, 10,000 people went on their way. And it's important to remember that, and this is a very, you know, simplified expression of it, we might lose friends, partners, you know, communities. And it's important to remember that on the other side of that is a new experience, a new community, a new partner, a new friendship, a new expression that will feel in alignment with where you're going. And I think it's important to remember that the loss can be part of the growth, and it's tricky, but it's beautiful.
Have you been watching my stories about my moringa tree?
What happened to your moringa tree?
Nothing, no problem. But I have a moringa tree that I grew from seed like 5 years ago. And my husband had always had a garden growing up, and I didn't. I had just started delving into growing things like when I was in my early 20s. And he was always very adamant about pruning them. Obviously. And I was like, no, don't prune any of these things. What if they don't grow back? And it was all fear-based. And over time, we've had to prune this moringa tree. I don't know if you know anything about moringa trees, but they need to be pruned regularly. They grow so big, and like you have to be on top of it. And every time he would prune it, I would not be able to look because I was so scared of the loss. Like, look at all of these leaves. And I use this moringa tree every time we prune it on my stories as a reminder that every time there's loss, and every time you feel bare, and every time that you feel like you've lost everything you've worked so hard for, the moringa tree always grows back. The leaves always show up. They always show up more abundantly, and they always show up bushier, like bigger and fuller. And I try to remind people that as we walk through these scary times, when we think that there's no light at the end of the tunnel and we think that we're never going to catch a break, continuing to put one foot in front of the other, we are always rewarded for walking through fear. There is always abundance on the other side. There's always a lesson. There's always some kind of growth. By shedding these people and situations and communities, you are only making more energetic space for the things that are much more meant for you. And it's walking through and having faith and trusting in that in-between process when you feel like the turtle without the shell or crab without the shell. It's learning how to trust in that time to keep walking forward and trust and have faith and know that on the other side, it's going to be so much better than what you imagined. This in-between part is so important to making sure that you're ready for what is to come next in the abundance, in the bigger, more deep friendships that you're going to have that you weren't in a place to have before. So I'm so glad that you said that.
Thank you for bringing space for it.
I do have 5 fun questions that I want to ask you. What are some of your favorite parts of Norwegian culture from when you were there?
Okay, they have this term called kuschelig, which means like cozy. And it means like you create this cozy environment. Norway's really dark for, you know, 6 months of the year, maybe even more. And, you know, having things like cozy foods and candles and you know, very like cozy blankets and textures. It's a very sweet experience. I love this whole idea of making things cozy in the times where it's dark. And I feel that very metaphorical as well. Like, make yourself comfortable in the dark times.
Well, it seems like that's a theme in all of these, like Norway, Denmark, Sweden. They all seem to have a word for this exact thing for that exact reason, because there's so much darkness. But it seems like there's a lot of community.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like an integral part of these societies and of coziness, right?
It is. It's very special. I think in Denmark, it's called hygge or hyggi. Yeah. Or Sweden has another term, or maybe it's similar. I mean, the languages are very similar. So, but it's a beautiful aspect of that culture.
What is your favorite female character? And what I mean by that is, like, when we look at ancient women, goddesses, different religions, whether it's like Circe, Artemis, Kali, why are you giggling? Is it because you know exactly who you're going to say?
I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's the one that came through when you asked the question. So I should just say it.
Yeah.
So because I think the time of the year we're in, what came through was the character Sheila na Gigg. And she is this embodiment of this. She's found on many churches in across the Celtic lands, but also in Europe. And she's holding open her vulva, and she's this squat little woman who opens up her vulva, and she's birthing the world. And I just love this energy of like fierce and just against the grain, but she's found in all these sacred spaces. So if you look her up, I think you'll understand why I was thinking twice before I brought her forward. But I would say that right now, I think her energy is wonderful to experience and express.
And it's so wonderful and appropriate for the conversation. Now that you described her, I have seen her. And it is very fierce and powerful and inspiring, dude.
Yeah.
She's like really in her power from if I'm thinking of the same person. And I found, I think I came across her picture probably when I was like preparing for birth or saw it in like my midwife's office.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great, great, great choice. So I want to know also, what does your self-care and energetic care on a day-to-day basis look like? Because you are doing a lot from what I see, and I will list it out. You already know this. You're doing content creation, which your feed is beautiful. I can never stop staring. Course creation, carrying out courses. You have a blog, or you used to have a blog. I was on your herbal blog the other day. Reading about all this spiritual energetics. And I'm pretty sure I get a newsletter from you. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing so many things, and that requires rest and self-care. So how do you juggle it all?
And help.
Okay. Well, I love the honesty. That's what I needed to hear as well.
Yeah, I have help. I have a wonderful team that supports a lot of what is expressed in the world. I'm very involved with the content creation, though. It's hard to be a content creator and not be involved in that. Actually, I feel like it needs your spirit into it, your energy. I'll start there, but I will also say that, you know, sometimes I go into the more masculine aspects and have long days, but I very much alleviate that or balance that with time where I'm, you know, working a 10-hour week. And I'll actually block that off in my calendar. Like, this is going to be a week of rest, and I'm going to be having space this week to just do what feels like it's necessary. My practices daily change. I do have a morning practice, but what I do in it shifts and changes. It depends, you know, on many things, morning meetings, where I need to be at any one time. I try to start my day later when I can. So I do have space, but it's not always possible. And I would say I do take as much alone time as I can get. I'm fortunate in that I have a lifestyle that allows for that. But also, you know, for those that are mothers that are listening, or, you know, have a lot going on in the household as well. Like, you know, many of my clients and also teachers that I know have had children are very, very careful to wake up really early to have that space and time, because it's really important to just have that connection point with ourselves, to really ground down before things start moving in whatever form it takes. And it doesn't need to be long extended, but I think that's really important, to have some sort of energetic boundary for yourself about where you tap in. So I'd say that's a really important piece for me. And then, of course, working with plants in different ways. I love taking flower essences and herbs and, you know, oils, tinctures, all the rest of it. So working with plants is a really important piece for my own personal practice. And then being and connecting with nature, that's really, really important.
What are your top big three astrologically? What's your sun, moon, and rising?
Sun, Taurus, rising, Cancer, and my moon is Sagittarius.
You have a balanced chart. Well, I don't know your whole chart, but which one do you associate with the most?
Well, this is the thing. I feel very conflicted because I kind of go, especially with Taurus and Sagittarius, there's like this one part of me that wants to be a homesteader and home. And there's this other part of me that wants to be all over the world, pilgrimaging to sacred sites. And you know, there's so much of those two signs that I really feel drawn to. And then my emotional moon of Cancer, you know, a lot of people don't know I'm very, very sensitive. So that also is expressed in my chart, I would say.
Do you have any spiritual gifts?
Ooh, I think we all do. I notice that I feel most connected with clairvoyance and clairsentience. So clairsentience being when we get feelings, usually they can be tactile or they can be tactile. So whether you get flushes, heat, goosebumps, this kind of thing, and also clairvoyance in sight, seeing. And clairvoyance can happen, I think, in different ways. But I think we have all the clairs, and some are more developed than others. And yeah, I would say those are the two that I work mostly with because they're most comfortable for me.
In reference to you saying you believe everyone has them, something that I hear over and over and over again is it's like a muscle, all of these gifts, and you just need to practice them in order to refine them and develop relationships with them.
Yeah, and I think just by tapping into them is actively doing that, you know, paying attention to when your intuition is giving you a certain expression or experience, or paying attention to when you have, you know, a certain image or sight drops in. What is that? And that in itself is practicing, yeah, those. And when you hear the inner voice, you know, the clairaudience, or you hear, or you know, some people get it through taste and smell, and, you know, all the senses are actually hypersensory. So we can express them in a wider degree when we pay attention to them in that way. One of my favorite intuitive practices for, you know, people that maybe are just getting to know their intuition is to go on a journey where you ride a bike. So you're at like a decent speed or drive. Walking, you have too much time to think. So either riding a bike or driving, and you just go into a place that you're not necessarily familiar with, but you know is safe. And you just take turns. At each turn, you do it intuitive ping, and you see where you land. When you feel like, okay, this is the place I'm supposed to be. And, you know, if you do this in towns, you might end up at a really cool place that you wouldn't have discovered otherwise. Or if you do it in nature where you have a compass and you know how to get back, you can end up in some of the most beautiful lookouts or spots on your journey. And so I would highly recommend, if anyone listening is just learning to get tapped into their intuition, that going on an intuitive journey could be an interesting way to find a new expression of it.
I have to ask, because I'm so interested in doing this, have you ever done mushrooms?
No, I haven't actually. I've been very, how can I say this? Like, I haven't been very much in the plant realm from a hallucinogenic standpoint. I work a lot with herbs and plants and ingesting them, but not hallucinogenic so much. I think because I kind of have a hallucinogenic brain. Like, when I go to sleep at night, I'm seeing colors and geometries and things, and I get that that's kind of like what you see on mushrooms. I'm like,
Kate, you have been such a blessing, and I'm so glad that you took the time to sit with me and share about your journey, the divine feminine, priestess life. Can you tell all of my followers where they can find you, where they can stalk you, where they can see your workshops, all of the above?
Oh, thank you, Susie. Easiest place is always probably Instagram. So at This Is Kate Murphy is my handle, and my website, thisiskatemurphy.com. So you can read all about my work there. I would say the two big things that I do in terms of courses and teaching is the Sacred Spiral Priestess Journey, which is an initiatory journey that goes over several spirals. But the first one is the Sacred Spiral, and we move through a year and a day, weaving through the seasons and cycles of the priestess journey and what that is. And then I have the Feminine Code Business School, which we spoke about every spring. We just wrapped up the 2024 season. And I do mentorships as well, a little bit fewer because, life is busy. But yeah, that's how I work at this time. And we'll see what that looks like in next year because things evolve.
Delightful. I have learned so much. Thank you for such a grounded conversation and for sitting with me. And I can't wait for all of my followers to learn your wisdom too, and for you to continue sharing this with the world. And I can't wait the most to see how much larger this whole business becomes and how many more people you reach.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for inviting me, for the invitation and for holding the space and being so flexible and also honoring, like showing up even though things were not going according to plan. And I love that too, because there's just this fluidity with it. So appreciate you and for you sharing your gifts. And thank you. Thank you so much for this container.
I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at woowoobestie_Susie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the woo-woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.